You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. Brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the world's finest bookmaker, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary. To celebrate the launch of Nick Luck Daily, Fitzdares have a special sign-up offer that will double your winnings on your first bet up to a £50 stake. Just go to www.fitzdares.com/luck to sign up. Hi, welcome to the show. It's Friday already, August the 14th, and with the heatwave breaking up, a sultry overcast day across Britain, and plenty of good racing to look forward to here and in Ireland as well. And although the quarantine rules overnight have extended to France, posing some potential difficulties for those with runners at Deauville this weekend who may then have to quarantine for 14 days on their return, we're in pretty upbeat mood. On the podcast, there were some serious feel-good stories yesterday. A 300-1 winner in Ireland for Luke Comer, the longest priced in history in the UK or Ireland. And as revealed by our friend Dave Yates in today's Mirror, backed by his stable lad Alan Mulligan to win €36,000. Great stuff. Great day in Britain for the Crown Connoisseur Syndicate as well. Six West Country partners with two horses, both of whom won. One in the first at Salisbury, one in the last at Bath, and we'll be hearing from Pete Brend later in the show, as well as Great British Bonus Schemes Grant Pritchard Gordon on the 20 grand's worth of bonuses that this filly won on top of the prize money. And talking of prize money, a big boost from the Jockey Club, who announced that they would contribute 3.7 million into prize funds for the last 4 months of 2020, despite an expected loss of 75 million in annual revenue because of the pandemic. Now, in a moment, I'll be talking to Nicholas Wrigley, former senior steward, effectively chairman of the Jockey Club. But first, Lee Motter said, senior writer from the Racing Post. Lee, what impact do you think this Jockey Club announcement will have and will have had?
Well, it's clearly very welcome news. We all know that prize money hasn't been what we would have wanted it to be. And the Jockey Club, in many ways, leads the industry, leads the racecourse industry. So it's fantastic that they are able to put in more executive contribution to bolster the increased levy board funding to make many of these major races that we'll have between now and the end of the year more recognisable in terms of their financial reward for participants. I do think, again, it shines a light on this whole debate of how much should prize money be at the moment. And I do continue to have sympathy for both sides. I recognise that participants are hugely frustrated about prize money levels, but I also recognise that if you're a racecourse with no income coming in, it is very difficult at the moment to come close to maintaining your previous levels of executive contribution. I also feel sympathy in the whole general debate about prize money levels for those racecourses, and it's not just Jockey Club racecourses, who return all their profits back into racing, that they're not paying, many of them are not paying out shareholders. And for that reason, if they're not paying out shareholders, then whilst some of their profits might not be going into prize money, they will be going into other essential parts of the business, whether that's infrastructure, whether that's new facilities, et cetera, et cetera. So I do think this is a more complex debate than it's sometimes painted as. And therefore, while I do think the Jockey Club news is to be welcomed, I wonder whether those who lead some of the sport's smaller independent racecourses that are under serious pressure at the moment, as are Jockey Club racecourses, whether they will welcome the trumpeting of this announcement and the spotlight it shines on them.
Well, joining me now is Nicholas Wrigley, who is perfectly placed to talk about this. He has been the senior steward of the Jockey Club, is now a member of the Jockey Club, has recently taken over the chair of Aintree Racecourse. Nicholas, you are involved still in the organisation, but sufficiently impartial to give a pretty rounded view of this situation. How well do you think the Jockey Club has done here?
I've been impressed by it. I mean, I wasn't involved at all, and I didn't see anything about it until, like everyone else, I saw the press release. And I was surprised at how well they've done and how much money they have committed to prize money. in extremely difficult times. And I was struck reading the release by the number where, you know, very starkly it says that they have lost £75 million in turnover this year through not having people on the racecourse. And, you know, there are very few businesses which can withstand that sort of impact and still find, you know, the level of prize money that they're putting in.
How much pressure do you think this now applies to other racecourse groups and other independent racecourses to do something similar as regards their executive contributions?
I think there's this sort of myth that racecourses don't want to put money into prize money. Every racecourse that I've been involved in and I'm involved in, have been involved in and am still involved in, jockey club courses, large independents, York, small independents, Pontefract and what have you. And every one of them is focused at putting as much money into prize money as they possibly can. And all of them that I've been involved in commit everything to either prize money or the owner's experience by CapEx for facilities and what have you, and take nothing out. So I do find it rather depressing that people peddle this myth about many racecourses that they're all got this golden money tree, which they hide from racing participants. And put the money elsewhere. They're all committed to prize money.
So do you think that the more vociferous members of the horsemen's group, for want of a better phrase, need to pipe down?
I don't think they need to pipe down, but I think it would be quite handy if some of them went on an accounting course. I think that they might actually work things out. I mean, I think... If they could actually read a P&L and balance sheet, that would probably help their understanding.
And you speak as someone who not only owns several racehorses, but has bred horses as well. How hopeful are you that smaller and medium-sized owners can still enjoy the sport through the next couple of years?
I think we need to realise that if you have a massive recession like we are in at the moment with GDP dropping 20%, there are going to be people who are financially extremely stretched and businesses which are stretched. And in any recession, we see people have to make tough decisions about what to do with their money and what have you. And so people will pull out of ownership of racing. Those who can still afford to do so, I'm sure will do so, because they enjoy it. And I think people have to understand that, you know, to help their enjoyment, a united front where racing pulls together and is an enjoyable experience increases the likelihood of them staying, but lots of sort of wrangling and bickering makes for a rather fractious society and business and reduces people's enjoyment.
Nicholas, I've been lucky enough to serve on the Aintree Race Day Committee with you for a number of years now. Clearly, the situation that we find ourselves in with you taking over the chair from the late and much missed Rose Patterson is not a situation any of us wanted to find ourselves in. Just tell me a little bit about your role moving forward.
Yes, I mean, it's not the circumstances I'd like to have taken over on in, but it's obviously a great honour. And my role is really to continue the work that Rose did, because Rose was a wonderful chairman. She was passionate about everything to do with Aintree. And so I've got a very difficult job to try and keep all the balls in the air that she had and to continue to take it forward, because it's undoubtedly true that Aintree was a very, very happy organization, very, very at peace with the local community, very close relationship. And, you know, I long to continue that good work that she did.
And my thanks to Nicholas Wrigley. A complex year ahead for all racecourses, whoever they be, and so many complexities for the new BHA Chief Executive, Julie Harrington, to get her head around before she assumes the role at the beginning of January 2021. We discussed this quite extensively with Rishi on the podcast the other day. And all manner of interesting stories this week, Lee, that she'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, absolutely. For Nick, I'm just penning my column for Monday's print edition now, and I'm linking the arrival of Julie Harrington to the Phoenix Thoroughbreds news that came out through the week, stealing the thunder to an extent of Julie Harrington's appointment at BHA. And it does strike me that one of the issues she will be faced with as she goes forward is further examining the extent to which the BHA is upholding the sport's reputation. We all know the Phoenix debate that's been taking place, and we should stress that Amir Abdulaziz Salman denies all the allegations that have been laid against him. But I think there are many people who would question the BHA's reaction to the Phoenix situation, and in effect allowing them to carry on as before until Phoenix remove themselves from British racing. And we hear transparency an awful lot. So it's a big watchword in racing, right? Transparency, and generally it's in relation to racecourses and their finances. But I do think more questions need to be asked of owners sometimes, these high profiles that come into the sport. And when there are questions regarding where their money comes from, and particularly where those owners are at the centre of major news stories, I think questions do need to be asked. And I think questions probably need to be asked by the horsemen taking their money as well. And I think if you're not confident of where the money comes from, then I do think you can question, as a regulator and a receiver of that money, whether you should be taking it.
It's an interesting point you raise, and it's a point not dissimilar to the one we spoke about a couple of days ago with Rishi, when we talked about the fit and proper persons rule and the application thereof. And that doesn't just apply to where your finances come from, but your business ethics and your personal ethics.
Absolutely right. And it's a huge issue, and it's a massively complex issue too, Nick, because there are people in this sport, and we know who they are, that regulators, governing bodies and the media will tiptoe around. And I think sometimes outsiders or viewers of the sport will take that to be an example of fawning deference to those individuals. I would say it absolutely is not. I'd say what it is, and certainly as a journalist, I would make this point, it is that sense that there is a fear that if certain people take umbrage at things that are said, they could remove a huge number of horses from the sport, far more than Phoenix. And you then have that question of thousands, hundreds or thousands of lost jobs and the responsibility for that. I think in terms of the moral question, though, it is right to ask questions. And there are people who have come into this sport in the last year or two and had major success in this sport, where you only have to do a little bit of Googling against their name to see that questions should be asked. And I know, having spent time in Japan last year and become a bit more immersed in racing in Japan, that they are incredibly diligent before allowing owners to take part in the sport. Now, again, there'll be some there who you would question should they be involved, but they certainly ask more questions. And I think we should increasingly be asking questions. And if we're not getting answers, we should be wondering why and perhaps taking action.
Well, everyone's in need of a little bit of a boost at the moment, owners especially. And we will be talking to one owner in a few moments' time who's been the beneficiary of the Great British Bonus Scheme. The scheme manager is Grant Pritchard-Gordon. Grant, just tell us why this is so important and so timely.
It's timely because just at this moment, we've actually distributed over £500,000 in bonuses to very hard-hit owners and breeders. We started at the end of May, and it's already had a lot of traction. As I said, 33 winners of the races. Some are winning £20,000 bonuses, some are winning £10,000 bonuses. The £10,000 bonuses are for horses not by British Stallions. You get £20,000 by a British Stallion. And the one requirement is that the filly has to be born in Great Britain and have a GB suffix. But it's very relevant at the moment because of owners and prize money. And I mean, we had a situation yesterday. There was a filly called Crazy Luck who won at Salisbury for a wonderful syndicate, Crown Connoisseur Syndicate. And I think they only won about £3,500 in prize money, but they won £20,000 in bonus. And there are other really good stories out there. There's a man called Kevin Richardson who couldn't get £5,000 for his filly Brazen Bell in the Goffs UK sale last year. She's won twice for him. He put her in training, and she's won £40,000 in bonuses, whereas only £7,500 in prize money. I mean, there are other cases like that. And I think it's so important for the industry, for owners, particularly with the yearling sales coming up in less than 2 weeks' time, that owners can see a little bit of light. How can we make this business pay to enjoy our fun, you know?
Well, Grant, thank you very much. That bonus won yesterday by the Crown Connoisseurs, as you were saying. And from the Crown Connoisseurs, I'm delighted to be joined by Pete Brendan. For good measure, the syndicate went on to have the winner of the final race at Bath yesterday as well. So it was an across-the-card double. Pete, this is the sort of stuff that dreams are made of, isn't it?
I was still coming off the ceiling, you know. It was so exciting for the day. We'd been looking really forward to it. And then for it to come through was great, you know, to see... Singing the Blues Crossing the Line at Bath at the end of it was fantastic.
Let's talk about the first winner, Crazy Luck, because you have, between you, trousered a lot of bonuses. I think over 20,000 in Great British bonuses. How much of a difference does that make to smaller partnership and syndicate ownership?
Well, for us, it allows us to pay for next season and the year after and then start looking for reinvestment for us. And it, you know, there's six of us in the syndicate at the moment, and we're a first year syndicate, and we're just trying to grow it as we go through. So it's very important for us at the moment. It's given us a lifeline that we needed to push on forward, which is great.
So tell me a little bit about yourselves and the six of you and your backgrounds and how you got into the game.
So I personally have been in ownership for probably about 14 years. And then over the last couple of years, I was beginning to lose interest. And then, because I was just doing it by myself, whereas now I thought, I'll get a few friends together who, you know, we all club in, we all enjoy our racing. And now we kind of completely reignited our desire for racing. And then, of course, coming across the Millman family and Rod, yeah, those guys are so excitable about things. They just inspire us to keep going, you know?
And what is it about the way they look after you and the experience you have with them that keeps pushing you forward?
But it's their enthusiasm. They are so personable as people. Every time you phone them up, they have time to speak to you. They give you every detail about your horse. They're just knowledgeable about the whole game. So they won't just talk to you about your own horse. They'll talk to you about what they think is going on in the industry. And they just generally pay an interest in you as an individual.
So tell me a bit about your background in the sport.
So I started out with... we're all based in the Southwest, really. So I started out with Rodney Farrant as our first trainer. And then Pigeon sadly retired. And then I had a course that was untrainable that I moved to Andrew Boulding called Little Pete. And they couldn't get him up the gallop, so Andrew just trained him in the swimming pool. And then from there, I had a couple of winners for over 5 years with Andrew, and then tried various other trainers around, not because of anything, myself and Andrew are still very good friends, but just fancy trying something different. And then last year, you know, I tried to, the story with Rob Millman was I tried to buy Betty's Hope off of him before the Super Sprint back in last May. And he said to me, he said, if she wins her next race, she's for sale. If she wins her next race, she's not for sale. But you know, if she finishes second in the next race, she can buy her. But so sadly, she went and won her next race, and then the next race after that was the Super Sprint that she won. So, and then Rod phoned me back a couple of weeks later. He said, I think I've got this horse for you called Singing the Blues. Are you interested? And I just moved on from there with it. And yeah, the syndicate kind of followed in with us, really.
So Singing the Blues is one of last night's winners, and Crazy Luck got the ball rolling at Salisbury. I'm pleased to say, not named after me, but much more talented, pleasingly. What expectations did you have going into Crazy Luck's race?
Well, we know she'd had a fairly gentle introduction at Windsor, but to be perfectly honest, my hopes weren't particularly high yesterday. The rest of the syndicate said, you must be joking, we're gonna have a cross the card double. They're all eternal optimists, and I'm the other way around, so yeah.
Well, how was the celebration last night, Pete?
After going to the races, I was at both races. I did a cross the card sweep in the car. I had to get back to North Devon, and the celebrations were pretty mute, to be honest with you, but I think the rest of the guys had a good time.
Well, I hope so. You deserve to. The fact that you, during these behind closed doors racing times, managed to do Bath and Salisbury on the same day, see both winners, is quite something. And just massive congratulations to all of you.
Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you.
So that just leaves us to find a winner or two, and we found the right man to do it. Lee Mottershead's been in blinding form since the beginning of this podcast. Lee, it's all yours.
Well, you're awfully kind. I let you down last time with a second, and I'll almost let you down even more with what I'm about to say now. Really looking forward to the Ebor Festival. It's my favourite flat meeting of the year. Desperately sorry that the racegoers, spectators, fans aren't going to be able to get to the Naismeyer this year. It remains a big issue over the sport getting spectators back. Fortunately, we've got great TV coverage on ITV and Racing TV to enjoy next week. In the big one of the week, the Judmont International, I've got a big fancy for Lord North. I thought he was tremendously impressive at Ascot. The turn of foot he showed there really, really struck me. And I think he could do a hauling at York next week. He very much looks like a hauling figure to me. So I take him to beat Gaeth on Wednesday, and one of the big races on Saturday at Newbury. Alignac just looks all over the copybook, textbook, trademark Sir Michael Stout, potential improver as an older horse. Looks an interesting one for me in the Geoffrey Freer Stakes, so I would go with him in that race. But for my documented tip in this podcast, I go from the race on Saturday at Newmarket, the 2:05, the Heed Your Hunch at Betway Handicap. It's a mile and a half race. I think 2 Nathaniel, another horse trained by John Gosden, strikes me that Newmarket as a race course should be right up his street. Been a little bit disappointing since winning at Kempton in June, but I'll take 2 Nathaniel to bounce back at Newmarket.
To Nathaniel, for John Gosden, for Lee Mottershead today, thank you very much for listening. If you do enjoy this podcast, please do tell not just your friends, but people you don't like as well, because you never know, they might like it. And you can urge them to rate us, review us, and subscribe on SoundCloud, Spotify, iTunes, and Google. And we will see you again on Monday. That was Friday. Thanks very much for listening. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with Fitzdares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.